Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. So, we made it through the Super Bowl. We have a day off of football today. And then tomorrow, spring football starts for Arizona State. And the Hot Shots start play this Sunday. And the NFL calendar rolls over in about, what are we at? Today's the 4th. In 5 weeks, less than 5 weeks, actually. So the combine's in 3 weeks. Just doesn't stop. Doesn't mean that we're just going to sit there and focus on football because, you know, the game itself, I was not one of those. I don't know about you, the Super Bowl party that I was at. Everybody was complaining about the lack of scoring and the Maroon 5 and Adam Levine, whether he'd wear a hat or not. You could put money on that stuff. You know, the whole thing about Julian Edelman being back out on the field after his suspension and how CBS should have addressed that. I think that came from a bunch of angry media guys. Nobody I was at my Super Bowl party was saying, wow, they should address Julian Edelman and what happened to him at the beginning of the season. There was not a whole lot of hate towards Tom Brady. There was not a whole lot of hate towards a record low 16 points, other than people said, boy, this game is really boring. Yeah, I know. Our country is one of those. We have to see points everywhere. A 2-1 baseball game, an 88-87 basketball game, or a Super Bowl that finishes 13-3 is boring. Boring is usually for people that don't understand the game. I know most people that watch the Super Bowl are just the casual fans. I'm not being a football snob here or even a sports snob. It may sound like that. If you don't know the nuances of the game and you're busy and you're doing your life and you're doing your business or whatever it is you're doing, you don't have time to appreciate a 13-3 game. You want to see 37-34. You want to see Todd Gurley run 80 yards for a score. Todd Gurley didn't do a whole lot yesterday. Me, as I'm sitting there watching the game yesterday, a few thoughts came through my little peanut between the ears. What was Josh Gordon doing yesterday? Where was Josh Gordon at yesterday? I have to believe somebody somewhere tried to go get to Josh Gordon. If you remember, Josh Gordon was having a pretty darn good season for the Patriots, and then he fell off the wagon, had to go into rehab, and that was the last time we heard or saw Josh Gordon. And the team that he's on is winning a Super Bowl. He'd gotten his head kicked in Cleveland, had all sorts of problems off of the field. And so here it is on the biggest day, because he couldn't stay away from whatever his demons were. He's somewhere watching the game yesterday. That was of interest to me. I could care less about what St. Louis was thinking about watching the Rams. That story has been told over and over and over. In New Orleans, I thought it was pretty funny today. They had a blank front page and said, Super Bowl, what Super Bowl? I thought that was pretty funny, pretty smart. Although, in this day and age of journalism, you'd like to see people go at it. I hope they didn't send people down to the game to cover it. Would it have been a better Super Bowl if the Saints had played rather than the Rams? That all sounds great to talk about. It didn't happen. Okay, Roger Goodell did not cancel the NFC Championship result. So when you're one of those people that, well, the Rams shouldn't even be here, it's not all fair in love and war, right? Look, Jared Goff had no clue what he was doing, in my humble opinion. As I was watching the game, it was a 24-year-old quarterback against a 40-year-old GOAT, greatest of all time. So just in that matchup alone, as the game progressed, it had a feel that Tom Brady's going to do something. And he did. He found Gronk down a seam. What do you know? Shocking, right? He just went out and did his usual deal. That's what he does. And people that like to hate, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I saw in Pittsburgh where they put up a font. That's what you identify somebody as. They put the font up in Pittsburgh on TV news in Pittsburgh as known cheater for Tom Brady. You know, we try really hard. It's fun doing what we do. There is a serious side of journalism. But when people's own personal thoughts creep into known cheater, I don't know that. It's just who the person is. This is news. The highlight of the night for me was the Washington Post spot. It just was. And for many, many, many reasons. And I got crushed this morning by putting it up. I thought the NFL 100 spot was pretty smart. Most of them I could care less about. I don't care about corn syrup and beer. I don't. How that moves the needle, I don't. Eric, do you care about corn syrup and beer? at all.
No, I don't. And I agree with you. I thought for the most part the commercials were underwhelming, but I found the game to be intriguing.
There were not enough chimps.
No.
There were not enough dogs.
I agree.
When you have chimps and dogs, or just animals in general, it usually sells a lot better than somebody saying corn syrup.
Unless the mass media feels that, and the commercial people makers feel that that's sort of a last generation effort, and now they need to do more forward thinking generational.
So the millennials efforts that I was sitting with, including my daughter and her friend who are 24, could care less about corn syrup. They didn't laugh about corn syrup. They actually did cry. My wife cried. My daughter cried. Her friend cried at the spot of the Chargers coach, where the
first
responders.
Oh yeah, Anthony Lynn.
Anthony Lynn.
Great,
yeah.
great commercial.
They bawled, like just bawled.
Because there was a human element to that. Most Super Bowl commercials don't really touch your heart.
Right.
They're just more for entertainment. That one was far less for entertainment, but was way more impactful than probably any other commercial you saw last night.
But they were all bored with the game because this is what they do. They don't sit there every Sunday and watch. Like Michael Bublé's spot got a laugh. I was like, I don't care. I'm not going to go buy your water, or whatever the brand was. Nothing stuck with me yesterday.
And I wasn't totally paying attention to all the commercials because I was more in tune on what was going on Twitter, just seeing what people said about the game. So sometimes during the commercials, I was just looking down at my phone being antisocial.
Was it one of the worst ever?
Games?
Yeah.
It depends on your definition of what you like in football. I mean,
I like a defensive struggle.
Exactly. You and I talk about it all the time. Was it bad offense or was it just two really well-prepared defenses?
When Sean McVay comes out and says, I got out coached, what's he going to say?
I loved it. It's good that he fell on the sword for Jared Goff, because a lot of people are killing Jared Goff today.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you saw in the replays, like, they showed the different angles, and there was really nobody open most of the time.
Right.
And when Goff did have time to throw and did have an open receiver, he was not accurate. That's a bad combination. That's how you're going to score 3 points in a game. And it was only fitting at the end that the Rams missed that field goal because, like, of course, that's the way it should be. Because, you know, when you're bad on offense the entire game and you try to run out and kick a field goal and then you're just hoping upon hope that you can get the onside kick and then throw a Hail Mary, it's just...
See, I like...
I never thought, Brett, not to interrupt you, I'm just going to interrupt you one
more
time.
But you did. It's fine.
I never thought, even at 3-0, that the Rams were ever in that game.
I agree with you on that. I do agree with you. Our opening comments, first and foremost, are brought to you by Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor. Protect what matters most. When was the last time that you yourself took a look, a good, long, hard look at everything that you have in place? And if you were not to come home tonight, and for you to say, well, that's really scary, can you tell me when it is you're going to check out of here? Because none of us get out of here alive. I'm not reading a script. It's just how it is. So do you have everything taken care of? Do you have everything planned out? Do you have everything laid out the way that you want it to go? Protect what matters most. That's your family. So log on to Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. You get plenty of great information there. We're going to have Michael Lev on today. Michael is with the Arizona Daily Star, U of A Wildcat insider. And you're like, day after Super Bowl, why Michael Lev? There's an epidemic that is going on in college football now, and it involves people, players, transferring out of what they call the transfer portal. Transfer portal has now become a just common phrase that is thrown around. And I don't think you understand. A lot of people I talk to say, what's the deal with all these guys transferring? The transfer portal. So Michael's going to come on with us. We'll talk to him about that in about 15 minutes. On the other side, though, because James Harden is in town tonight, and there was just a big trade in the NBA with Anthony Davis, and the Suns have done absolutely nothing, I'm going to get into that. Then we'll talk to Michael. I'm going to talk, too, about the Waste Management Open and Ricky Fowler. Plenty of show ahead of us. We have the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen, in place on this fine Monday. Eric as well. I'm Brad Susmat, Sports360AZ.com. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Fox Sports Arizona for the Brad Susmat Football AZ show, which airs 12 times per week on FSAZ. We appreciate their support. All right. So we're going to do some of these Super Bowl commercials in a bit, a little bit about Maroon 5 and all that. But I want to get into what is the train wreck of the day, and that is the Suns. So the Suns have lost 10 in a row. You have to work really hard in the NBA to lose 10 games in a row. In fact, the Suns are on a worse pace than they were last season when they got the number one overall pick. And I bring all this up, you're like, Brad, you're killing these poor Suns players and this team. Yeah, because it's the same old crapola. May 29th, 2010 was the last day that the Suns had a playoff game. Tonight, they have James Harden here in town. James Harden is absolutely destroying the NBA. The last player that had 600 or more points in a month in the NBA, and James Harden had 615 in the month of January. The last player to do that was Michael Jordan. To give you an idea of what James Harden is doing. Now, sometimes it's a hard watch with James Harden. I think if you spotted him, the A, both S's, a T and an S, he still couldn't spell assist. He just doesn't know how to pass. It's just not in his language. But he's going to come in tonight. He'll play in a three-quarters empty arena. And here he is, the MVP who went to Arizona State. And I don't know if greatness is really, truly being appreciated by one of our own. We liked James Harden when he was at ASU. He showed up in shorts, a T-shirt, a backpack, was kind of quiet, did his own thing. I never imagined I'd be seeing a future Hall of Famer. I never imagined I'd see a player that was breaking Michael Jordan numbers. And yet here he is. And for the Suns, it's got to hurt Robert Sarver. If anything hurts Robert Sarver, I know it's not his bank account. I know that's not the case with him. I know it doesn't seem like it matters to Robert that they're playing in front of mainly, I don't know, family and friends sometimes when I see them at Suns games. There's just not a whole lot of buzz there. But the NBA trade deadline is this week. There is hope this week for the Suns. This Thursday is going to be like a national holiday across the NBA. We already saw a big trade this last week. Porzingis gets sent from New York to Dallas. And now it is the Suns' turn to try to do something, to do anything, because they keep telling us through these last 9 years, we're going to put money away, we're not going to be reckless, we are going to be involved in free agency. With the Diamondbacks going through a bit of a shift, and I think an even bigger shift to come, the Suns, which were the team of Phoenix. If you remember the days before the Diamondbacks were here, everything was about the Suns. And you look at them now, and they're just an afterthought. But there's hope. Trust me, there is. Robert has all this money set to the side. In this summer's free agent class, just this summer, you have Kevin Durant, you have Kawhi Leonard, you have Kyrie Irving, you have Jimmy Butler, you have Klay Thompson, you have Kemba Walker. Robert, please, please attract a star player here. Because when you roll out young kids like DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, fans just aren't going to attach onto them. When I go out and speak in the community, which is a lot these days, fans can't even name more than a couple of players on the team. That's not good. I get it. The Diamondbacks are in somewhat the same case. The Coyotes are in somewhat the same case. When you've been irrelevant as long as you have been, fans are not going to show up in the big numbers and droves that we're used to seeing. So let's just say the Diamondbacks decide to trade Zach Greinke and decide to trade Robbie Ray here in this offseason. They've already traded the face of the franchise and Paul Goldschmidt. If I say Luke Weaver, most fans are going to be like, who's Luke Weaver? Well, he's part of the Paul Goldschmidt trade. He's a big deal. Spring training starts today. My point in this rant is when you look at what's going on in Phoenix and you see what's going on just within our great state, there's not a whole lot to get excited about, it seems like, on a daily basis. But I really do think that there are the pieces in place to go do some major building and to try to shift the narrative away from we're close, we think we're just a couple of years away. Fans, season ticket holders do not want to hear that in this day and age. They just don't. Michael Lev is next. We're going to talk with Michael about the transfer portal. Why is the transfer portal becoming a big part of college athletics, in particular college football? And then later, some of the news and notes around the Super Bowl. We'll get back to that. It's Fun Monday. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's turn our attention now to a term that has popped up in the last 6 months. And a lot of fans have asked me about this. What's the transfer portal all about, Brad? It's really changing the game of college football. Michael Lev is with us from the Arizona Daily Star, U of A Wildcat insider. He wrote a really good take on this, I thought, over the weekend, to walk people through how it's now in space where a college player does not need permission from their current school for their desire to transfer out. And we're seeing mass exodus now of college players. Arizona State lost 4 just this weekend of guys that are in their primarily senior going into fifth year type of spaces, but others as well. So I wanted to have Michael to come on and talk about transfer portal. When did you first start seeing this, Mike, in terms of this is going to become something in the space of college football, and in particular for the U of A and ASU?
Right. I heard about it late last year, and it actually went into effect in October, but it doesn't seem like it really took off until this past season ended, you know, and then you just seem like you heard every single day, like somebody's entering the transfer portal, another player is going into the transfer portal. And it really kind of took on a life of its own. It's obviously kind of a funny science fiction-y type of name that really, had caused a lot of jokes on Twitter and that sort of thing. But, you know, it is actually having a huge and real impact on the sport of college football, especially, and it actually applies to every sport. Anyone can quote unquote enter it, but it's created what's essentially free agency,
right?
In college football, it's given players or student athletes much more freedom than they've ever had before.
So I'm curious, are there outside influences that will tell a kid, you're not being respected enough by a coach, coach leaves, you're not playing enough, they just got in a transfer, you need to get out of there, and most of these kids don't know what they're getting into? Or is it, as you put it so well, it's just free agency, it's just, it's time for me to take my talents elsewhere? Not that I like that, but that seems what it's about.
I think it's probably a combination of the two. I think those conversations and those influences always have existed. The difference now is that it's just much easier to initiate that process. You know, before you had to, as you mentioned at the top, you had to ask permission from your current school, and there was a lot more red tape to navigate. Now, all you have to do is say, I want to do this. You take the request to compliance. You know, they're obligated to honor your request to transfer. You fill out some paperwork within 48 hours. It has to be done, and then, boom, your name is in the portal. What's interesting to me is that, it doesn't necessarily 100% mean that you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like an opportunity to explore your options. But once you put your name in there, I mean, it's kind of like putting your cards, turning your cards over on the table, right? Like everyone knows at that point that you're unhappy in some form or fashion, and your current school is not obligated to renew your scholarship once the current academic term is up. So even though it's not like a guarantee that you're going to leave, it pretty much does mean that you're going to leave.
Yeah, people may not be aware, and it's a good point you bring up, that just because you get a scholarship and you get your full ride, it's renewable every year. There's no guarantee. So the minute that you put your name in that portal, can coaches access that portal? Is it only players? Fans can't access that portal. Who can access that portal?
Oh yeah, coaches definitely can. Coaches, administrators, I mean, it's basically available to the schools and the players. And, you know, one of the guys that I interviewed for that story that you referenced, Antonio Park, said that he had about 10 different schools contact him after his name popped in there. So it's sort of like, in a way, it's kind of like being recruited all over again,
mm-hmm.
You know, which was, you know, we've had this phenomenon available to players through the grad transfer process, which was pretty clean and easy. And once you graduated, you're free to go to any other school. You'd have immediate eligibility. This opens it up to not only the grad transfers, but anyone who wants to transfer. And I think another point that's kind of important to note for your audience is just because you're in the transfer portal, that doesn't mean you're eligible to play next season.
Mm.
You're still subject to regular NCAA transfer rules unless there's some sort of special circumstance, and you can file a waiver claim with the NCAA, and then they'll deal with each case on an individual basis.
Talk with Michael Lev, Arizona Daily, Star U of A Wildcat insider on the transfer portal. How has this impacted what Kevin Sumlin is trying to do at U of A?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there would have been roster turnover this offseason, whether there was a portal or not. I think that's just natural whenever you have a coaching change. When he came in here, there wasn't a lot, if any, of that kind of talk to the extent of, I'm just looking to get my players in here. I can't wait to get my players. He was, from day one, he was like, these are the guys I have. These are the guys I'm going to ride with. Now that we've gotten into the off season between year one and year two, obviously there have been some meetings between coaches and players, some discussions about sort of what's the best for your future. And some guys have decided or have been nudged in the direction of, pursuing other options. And I think the difference between, the pre-portal days and what we have now is that it's just more public than it was before.
What about a quarterback for U of A? Because you've linked a quarterback at Texas A&M to U of A in terms of interest in transfer portal. Does this go both ways at the quarterback position?
Of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I pointed out, and because unfortunately it was like only one sentence out of 1,500 words in that story, but any of the schools who are, quote unquote, losing players can also benefit from this system. They have access to it. They can reach out to players and try to bring guys in. The quarterback you're referencing is Nick Starkle, who was, the QB for a season plus or so under Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzoni at Texas A&M. He began the 2017 season as the starter, and then he got hurt and Kellen Mond took over and really kind of took off with the job there at A&M. Starkle has put himself out there now as a grad transfer. He listed Arizona as one of the schools he had, quote-unquote, early interest in for obvious reasons because of his connection with the coaching staff. I'm not sure it makes sense for him to come here because, he does not have a clear path to a starting position with Khalil Tate mm-hmm. Set to return to the Wildcats in 2019. Obviously, it would be really beneficial for Arizona to have him, because you'd have a lot more experience in that quarterback room. You'd have a viable backup option if something were to happen to Khalil, someone who's familiar with the system. It wouldn't take him very long to get up to speed. But most of the time with grad transfer quarterbacks, they are looking for a place where they can start immediately
right.
and relaunch their careers right away. And I'm not sure Arizona fits that description.
Yeah, but on Khalil Tate's end, Mike, if you look at this, is this a shot towards Khalil Tate or a wake-up to Khalil Tate that there's even interest from a player putting his name in the transfer portal? A guy like Khalil Tate could look at this and say, is there somebody telling him, hey, come out here because we're not all that enamored with what's going on with Khalil, or am I merely overthinking this?
I think that might be a little bit of overthinking.
Yeah,
but it's fun speculation, though, isn't it? I mean, there's nothing quite like the quarterback position in football. It's the one that we talk about the most, the one that gets scrutinized the most. I mean, there were a lot of theories down here when Jalen Hurts put his name out there that he was going to transfer.
Right. It's a good point.
That he was going to end up coming to Arizona, and that Khalil Tate was going to transfer somewhere else. But it's just easier said than done when it comes to Khalil, because he's not set to graduate by the end of spring. His graduation date is sometime in summer, which I think would enable him to become a grad transfer if he wanted to go that route, but mm-hmm. he wouldn't have as much time to get up to speed with whatever offensive system he needed to learn. And that's a very big deal. There are a couple places, theoretically, that he could go where he would know the offensive system already. His ex-offensive coordinator, Rod Smith, is at Illinois. Former head coach, Rich Rodriguez, is at Ole Miss. So theoretically, those would be landing spots. But the indications I'm getting from within the program are pretty clear that, this is the best option for Khalil, and it's also the best-case scenario for Arizona, which gets a productive and veteran quarterback back in the fold and doesn't have to rush any of its young quarterbacks onto the field.
Good stuff on this front, Michael. Appreciate the visit. Thanks.
Of course. Thank you.
Michael Lev there, Arizona Daily Star. Yeah, transfer portal is becoming just commonplace. This kid's going to enter his name. If you're Herm Edwards, if you're Kevin Sumlin, I don't know if it's the best situation because 19, 20, 21-year-olds, giving them the option of opting out and going and chasing their own dream, you could have free agency every year. Like Arizona State lost a whole bunch of players over the weekend, and it throws the system into chaos, I think. Couples of the Super Bowl commercials I really liked. We'll get to those. Some final thoughts on a busy Monday. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, before we get out of here, the game itself yesterday, I've not seen the number. Eric, have you seen a number yet? Any ratings on, because, you know, people go on social and they just lose their minds.
Have not. But let me see if my friend Google can help me.
Yeah, dig around on that. Because I felt like, to me, a defensive struggle, I enjoy 1-0 baseball games. I am that guy. I am that guy that if I go to a 82-81 NBA game, yeah, I know both teams probably shot a poor percentage, but I also know they probably played a little bit of defense. So I don't mind that. A pitcher's duel to me is great. A football game that's supposed to be the biggest of the year, if it's two teams that don't have a good defense and it's 44-43, is it really that great of a game? So the debate about was yesterday a lousy game or not, to me, it was fine. It was great.
CBS received a 44.9 overnight rating for the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history. Last year's contest
44.3
was a 47.4. So it was one of the lower rated Super Bowls.
One of the lower rated Super Bowls, but guys, it's a 44. That's like 20 times what a college football championship rating would be.
Yep. It was a 10-year low. It's
a 10-year low. The best World Series games on their best day are 10 shares and 11 and 12 shares, except in the cities their game is being played in. A 44 rating is a monster.
That's a gigantic number.
That's a monster number, as it should be. All right. So how do you want to do this? You want to go Washington Post spot first?
It's your show. Yeah, it's
my
show.
You want to follow my lead? All right.
You are the host.
That's a good way to put it. I do my thing. All right. This was the spot that I really liked. This was the one that caught my eye. And you can get mad at me. Some of you beat me up this morning on Facebook, and it's fine, okay? You might have missed it, so here it is. All right, so that was from the Washington Post. It's 2 minutes long. I'm not going to show the whole thing. You can go online. You can check it out. Am I sitting here saying that journalism is under attack with all the fake news and all that? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it was pretty cool that the 2-minute warning, a media outlet that I read and don't agree with often, but at least they have very good people, and it shows some of those people that were murdered doing their job. I'm one of those that does believe that journalism has a strong place. And for crying out loud, they bought a spot, the 2-minute warning of the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. That's not like a couple subscriptions with a rubber band thrown on your front porch, and it's the History Channel before it even hits your front porch. No, that was really good. Adam Levine, I have to get into this because while the game at halftime did not have a whole lot of action, and the guys sitting there doing their studio show, I mean, they turned to Boomer, and Boomer's got to come up with a take that's controversial because that's what Boomer does. And it's like, it's a 3-0 game. How much controversy can you stir up? It's Phil Simms trying to dig into the depth of Tom Brady. Everything was about Tom Brady, but this halftime show, I'm with different audiences, all right? I'm sitting there with people that are in their 60s and people that are in almost 70 and people that are in their early 20s, even high teens. The early 20s, high teens sat in front of the TV and bopped their heads and sang. I did not. Adam Levine looked like a billboard for California across his abs. It's great. Knock yourself out. I guess there's different rules for what we call malfunction, a wardrobe malfunction, when a nipple of a man is being shown versus Janet Jackson, the nipple of a woman at a Super Bowl. This was supposedly really cool. People that were older in the room were uncomfortable and did not like this at all in any way, any shape, any form. They thought it was just awful stuff. And then there's the group that says Bruce Springsteen did the best halftime show ever. Facts are, being in the world of Twitter and social media, it's like being in a, as my friend Bill Gutekunst would say from AZ Central, it's like being in the world's largest sports bar. And I'm fine with that. Everybody had an opinion. It doesn't mean any of them were right. It was entertainment. We got away for about 4 hours. The other thing that caught my eye yesterday was, let me go back. Saturday night, Kevin Mawai from Arizona State. Arizona State brought Kevin Mawai in. We had him on the football show 3 weeks ago. Many of you had not heard the name Kevin Mawai. Kevin Mawai was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Saturday night. Kevin Mawai played the position of center in the NFL. That's not something that gets a whole lot of attention, but he basically took the position and reinvented it. So you have an Arizona State Sun Devil coach make the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Saturday night. That's a pretty big deal, and that's pretty cool. He's been on the show. We'll have him on again. He's going to get his gold jacket. The Open, Eric, where you went Saturday? Did you go?
I went Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but I was there just kind of sporadically.
So Friday and Saturday, that's where people fall down just face first.
Really, Saturday was the real great people watching day.
Saturday was great people watching?
Yeah.
That's the people that just drink like fish and have way too much on Saturday.
Yeah, they start drinking at like 8 or 9 in the morning on Saturday, and by 1 or 2 in the afternoon, they're pretty much out of commission.
Did you follow any golf while you were out there?
I did. I did yesterday, actually, sat out on number 10 and watched Ricky Fowler's group through and a bunch of others. And it was amazing, Brad, how many people were out there. The weather was not good by Phoenix, Scottsdale standards yesterday.
Right, right.
There's still a lot of people out at the golf course yesterday with their rain gear and out there watching golf.
And I don't mean it in any disrespect, but it's just that there are people that go out there with the intent of getting trashed. And that's
and
it.
That's what makes the Phoenix
it.
Open what it is. That's kind of what makes the event that it is.
But see, I'm in that space where, like, my wife and I, we will go follow. We went out Wednesday, and we followed around Patrick Peterson because it was a pro-am.
Right.
And I want to see Patrick Peterson, if he's any good or not.
He is.
Yeah. And then
he's
we followed Torrey Lovello around, followed Torrey Lovello from the Diamondbacks around for 3 holes, 4 holes. We found our way over to Matsuyama. I like watching him swing a golf club. He's like 5 foot nothing and crushes it. And maybe back in the day, I would go to a suite and I went over to 16. It's fine. I've seen it. It's great. Not everybody goes there to get trashed. But I found it interesting that this year the Thunderbirds announced for the very first time that they would not release attendance totals. This is the first year. And usually that's like the biggest thing where, Brad, we set an all-time attendance record. Make sure you get it out on your story. We set an all-time attendance record. And this year, for some reason, they don't want to put it out there what the number is. Now, did the PGA Tour come in and say, guys, you're inflating your numbers? Were the numbers down this year? I don't know. I know that the Thunderbirds do great work. I know that we wrote 2 years ago that there should be a Ryder Cup here. And I know that this year that story started to gain more and more momentum. We wrote 3 years ago there should be, and could be, and there was negotiations to bring a U.S. Open here. And that picked up more steam this year. We try to stay ahead of what's going on the golf course because there's over 100 golf courses in Maricopa County. It's a big business.
I heard from some people, Brad, in the know that the Phoenix Open and the Thunderbirds are actually trying to lower their crowds. If you've noticed over the last few years, apparently the general admission ticket price has slowly increased. I think this year it was $60. And from what I was told, the ultimate goal is to eventually just get rid of the general admission ticket, and the only people that will be allowed in will be like greenskeeper passes and things like that. So you're getting more of the upper echelon group.
You don't want the people coming in with the general admission ticket.
Essentially, that's kind of what they're hoping to price those people out. But what they don't realize is people go there and spend so much money they don't even care.
Like, no, they
people
don't
go there with wads of money, and if they spend it all, oh well, it's okay. We had a good time.
It's the deal. Were you at the Open? That's where where it all goes.
And I think one last thing. I think we don't realize how great those golfers are until you're actually watching them hit that little ball in person. It's ridiculous.
Well, you stink at golf. You're not any good.
I'm not, and I have just a great...
And I'm not either.
I just have a great appreciation because they make it look so easy. I mean, I could be out there all day, and I couldn't hit a ball even remotely close to the pin.
Let me tell you something. When you're 6 feet eight, and you're off just by a little bit...
Ball goes in odd directions.
It just goes odd directions. Like, I'm watching Matt Kuchar, who's a big man. Mm-hmm. And yesterday he was struggling. Yesterday was great because everybody was not good yesterday.
I mean, Ricky Fowler won the event and had a triple.
He had a triple bogey.
And a double yesterday.
He shot a 3-over-74 and he won. And it's like back in the day when Randy or Kurt would pitch and they weren't good. And you'd watch their pitch count get up to like 80 in the fifth inning. And it's, wow, they are really trying to find themselves. And then they'd find themselves. You know, the greatness in sport is when you see a player that is not at their best, and then they figure it out. And that's what the great, like Ricky Fowler yesterday, it was terrific. His fifth PGA Tour title, and he was playing with both hands squarely around his neck rather than his club. He figured it out. We're going to head from here now over to the content side over on sports360az.com. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board, as always. Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of Nothing or Everything, depending on the day. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your Monday.